X-Talks connects professionals in the life science, medical device, and food industries with useful content like webinars, job openings, articles, and virtual meetings to help you succeed in your career. This Food Industry Focus podcast brings together some of our editorial staff to share insights into the latest B2B industry news to help keep you up to date. This week on the show, we are discussing how a smart chicken co-op is redefining backyard farming, and foodborne illness from raw milk is on the rise. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the X-Talks Food Podcast. I'm Sydney Perlmutter, Senior Food Industry Journalist and Webinar Moderator at xtalks.com, and this week I'm joined by Aisha Rashid and Vera Kovacevic. Thanks for coming today. So I'm going to start us off with a story about a smart chicken coop. So chicken coops, probably not the first thing that comes to mind, that's something in need of a smart upgrade. But an Austin, Texas-based startup called Coop is revolutionizing the concept of the chicken coop. And it recently launched its $2,000 smart chicken coop to enthusiastic early bird consumers. And after a certain date, I think in October, the price is going up by $500. So that's why they are for the early birds. So I actually spoke to the co-founder, Jordan Barnes, to find out how she and her fellow co-founder, AJ Forsyth, are redefining backyard farming. So I included some quotes in the story, but I'll get into a little bit more details from her in the podcast. So she said, AJ and I aren't just tech folks who randomly decided to dive into chicken coops. Between us, we've got decades of chicken keeping under our belts, so we've personally navigated the joys and challenges, the good, the hard, and the chicken crap, I'll say, of raising hens as a modern backyard farmer. For example, spent months, probably too many months, agonizing over the exact dimensions of the coop's metal mesh cage, going through hundreds of design revs. It wasn't just about looks, though we did aim for a design ethos that melded a rustic feel with a modern twist. It was about ensuring the utmost safety for the chickens in any backyard environment. We knew from experience how predators and other pesky critters could be sneaky around cages, something a newbie chicken person might not realize, but we knew was a seriously important part of the structure and safety. So every feature in our smart chicken coop, from this mesh design to the tech integrations, comes from a genuine understanding paired with over a decade of experience building consumer technology companies in Silicon Valley. We've created a coop that doesn't just look smart, but is smart, making it easy and approachable for anyone to dive into the world of backyard chickens. So, like I said, they have, you know, a shared history of chicken rearing, and that led to the months that they spent perfecting the design of the metal mesh cage. And for this smart chicken coop, the company collaborated with Bold Design, and this is a renowned San Francisco industrial design agency known for its work with brands like Nest and Roku. So the company created a chicken coop that truly stands out and looks pretty modern. But it wasn't just about aesthetics, like I said. Of course, safety was very paramount. So at the heart of the design is a very sophisticated AI system that the pair lovingly called CluckWatch. So this is an intelligent system that has been trained with over 7 million images, honing its ability to identify potential predators that might wander into the backyard. Jordan said, imagine your smart coop having this really smart friend watching over it named CluckWatch. Now, CluckWatch has seen millions of pictures of all sorts of animals, and with each picture, it's gotten really good at identifying who's who. However, the driving force behind Coop goes beyond smart tech and innovative designs, but it's really about reshaping how people view and consume food. Currently, around 3% of households are engaged in poultry farming, according to Barnes. But with the smart chicken coop, the goal is to make chicken raising more accessible, especially for newcomers. So, in terms of, you know, the real world sustainability of it all, Jordan said, we believe we have a decent shot at reshaping how we view and consume food. Did you know that the average egg in an American refrigerator is between 45 to 60 days old? That really shocked me, but I'll get your thoughts on that afterward. She said, the USDA doesn't even flinch if there are eggs up to 100 days old for sale. The nutrient density of these eggs degrade every day they sit in the fridge. We want people to experience the freshness of eggs laid the very same morning rather than consuming two-month-old eggs. That's where our coop comes in, bringing fresh daily produce right to your backyard. So Coop's vision is obviously to not only guarantee better taste and nutrient density, but it also, you know, it has these broader environmental and economic impacts. In addition to safer and fresher eggs, by reducing the need for long-haul transportation of eggs and the associated environmental impact, backyard chicken farming could be a game changer. And furthermore, Barnes, she envisions a future where neighborhoods are dotted with smart chicken coops, producing dozens of fresh eggs daily. And with such local production, communities become resilient, especially in the face of potential supply chain disruptions. And a while back, I can't remember when, but we spoke on the podcast about an egg shortage. So eggs are certainly, prone to issues, whether it be from avian flu or just, you know, high demand. But Jordan said, imagine a neighborhood where half of the backyards have coops and each day dozens of fresh eggs are produced right next door. This changes the dynamics entirely. Instead of eggs traveling hundreds of miles from a farm to your plate, they travel just a few yards. The reduction in transportation needs would have significant environmental impact benefits. Two. Not to mention, local production would also create a buffer against supply chain disruptions, making communities more resilient. The beauty of raising your own chickens is manifold. They are excellent biorecyclers. The average U.S. household discards 250 to 300 pounds of edible food annually, and chickens eat almost anything from leftover pizza to sushi, turning our waste into nutrient-rich eggs. Imagine feeding the chili flakes and getting eggs with red yolks. It's like a continuous, delightful science experiment in your backyard, which I thought was really, really cool. So Barnes and Forsyth's vision is grand, but it's grounded in reality. And as the technology continues to evolve, the integration of smart systems like those in the smart chicken coop with traditional practices can truly revolutionize how people produce and consume food. So coop obviously is not just about chicken, about rearing chickens, but it's about reimagining a sustainable future. So with that said, yeah, I want to get your thoughts on this. I mean, obviously, like I mentioned in the beginning, a chicken coop isn't really something that you would think was in need of a smart or tech focused upgrade. But having read about this and speaking to Jordan, I could absolutely see the vision and I truly love this idea. And I think it really makes something that could be an intimidating hobby into something that is totally possible for an average person, given that they have a backyard and enough room, to house the structure. But yeah, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I love the photos that you included in the article, Sydney, because it basically to me looks like a very sophisticated, big and modern doghouse almost, with a fence around it, you know, so that wild animals can't go in. Yeah, I think it's a great idea. I will say I'm not sure what the rules are in the States, but I know that in Canada, different cities have different bylaws about if residents can even keep chickens in their backyard or not. I know where we live in Toronto, and I looked this up, there was like a pilot program that started in 2018, and only specific areas of the city were allowed to have hens in their backyard, and it was very regulated, and the program actually ended in May of this year, but people were allowed to keep their chickens until the end of their life. And the Toronto residents were not allowed to like sell their chickens or sell any eggs to their neighbors even. And I found it really interesting. I didn't even know that it was prohibited to keep hens that are like outside of this pilot area. So I think the idea is great. I think cities like Toronto should definitely like consider allowing people to keep chickens in their backyard, just because I know the suburbs, there's like a lot of space. People have a lot of space in their backyard. And like you said, it's good for environmental reasons. And Yeah, people can like have fresh eggs in the morning, which sounds really great. And I think some people would really like this as like a nice hobby or something. And it's a shame that it's not allowed in most areas of the city.
Yeah, I think this is super, super cool. And yeah, like who would have thought that chicken coops and farming, actually, yeah, we do need tech to revolutionize and to improve things in every sector. And so AI is everywhere. So why not chicken coops as well? So yeah, I think this is really neat. And in addition to remote monitoring and monitoring for animals that could be in and around the coup or might, get inside. I think I'm just reading about some of the other features. It includes smart design ventilation and insulation. So, for hot summers, and then it has double-walled paneling for cold winters. So I think it has a lot of really cool features. And just to make rearing chickens easier for people who'd like to do so, and I would love to see this revolution kind of a thing where more and more people are growing their own food in their backyards or maybe community gardens. I can see something like this happening there if depending on the city, right? How Vera was saying, there might be strict regulations around whether you can raise chickens just in your backyard, but more and more cities and communities do have community gardens and things like that. So I can definitely see something like this smart chicken coop being useful in those kinds of settings. And yeah, like, and I had no idea that we're eating pretty old eggs. I know definitely we're not getting farm to table when we're going to the grocery store to buy eggs, but I didn't realize just how old they can be. And the fact that you lose nutrients every day that an egg is sitting on a shelf, like I don't think the average consumer is aware of that. And I think that's again, it really underscores the importance of access to more locally grown foods, because the nutritional value and then the quality just is on the decline the longer that it takes for you to get your food. So that's a really important point, and a point that again favors growing your own food or just having access to it in your community. So yeah, I really like this concept of the smart chicken coop, and it'd be great for chickens too, right? Like give them like a, it looks like a very bougie kind of a coop, so I'm sure they'd enjoy it too, and it'd improve their quality of life as well. So pretty cool.
Yeah, I was just at home last weekend, and I was staying at home with my dad, and he eats 5 eggs a day, and he is
Wow.
someone who,
A fellow egg lover.
oh, he absolutely loves eggs
Yeah.
in various different formats. But I was
Yes,
thinking while I
exactly.
was writing this that he would love to do this because it really is good for like a new, person who has no experience doing this. He's got a phone, got a backyard, got time, loves eggs, and you've got that
Great
initial
combo.
you've got that initial, 2000, potentially $2,500 investment. But if you love eggs and you want them as fresh as possible, and you don't want to risk, losing those, all those nutrients from grocery store eggs, and you don't want to not have access to eggs if there's ever a shortage, then I think this is a really, really awesome, product. And a friend of mine, his parents have a couple hens as well, and they lost one or two to like a hawk during the night. So I was, their safety really is important, and their lives are often cut short from, other animals killing them, unfortunately. So I think like having a camera there like really gives you a sense of assurance and safety for them as well. I think they would lead very, very nice lives in these coops. All right, moving on to another story. So
Last week, public health officials in Utah and Wyoming were investigating separate outbreaks of foodborne illness from raw milk consumption. And these outbreaks come at a time when raw milk is growing in legality. So I'll get to a little bit about what raw milk is shortly, but I'll just detail these cases a little bit first. So the Salt Lake County Health Department in Utah confirmed that 14 people have been infected with Campylobacter, which is a bacteria that causes foodborne illness from the consumption of raw or undercooked food, typically chicken, but in this case, it's milk. Of these individuals, all but two people reported drinking raw milk prior to their illnesses. So the affected patients' ages range from 2 to 73 years old, with one requiring hospitalization. And as of last week on Wednesday 11th, the source of the raw milk in Salt Lake County remains undetermined, prompting the department to advise the public to consume only pasteurized milk. And similarly, in Wyoming, the Department of Health confirmed that 5 people, one adult and 4 children, fell ill after ingesting raw milk purchased from Slow Food in the Tetons online market. 2 children from this group were hospitalized, and these patients residing in Teton and Lincoln counties were found to be infected with both Campylobacter and E. coli bacteria. State investigators link the illness to raw milk or its products, but have not yet identified the specific vendor involved. So state legality or state legislation regarding the sale of raw milk is witnessing a shift, with 27 states now permitting the sale of raw milk directly to consumers. While there are multiple avenues through which raw milk can be legally sold, from retail spaces to direct farm to consumer transactions or through herd share schemes, each of these distribution methods has its own set of regulations, primarily to safeguard the buyer. As the demand for raw milk increases, experts anticipate a further rise in states broadening their legislation pertaining to its sale. According to information from the 2016 Food Safety Survey and the 2019 Food Safety and Nutrition Survey conducted by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, 4.4% of American adults reported consuming raw milk in the past year. Many individuals believe that raw milk offers superior health advantages over pasteurized milk. However, this choice is not without its dangers, obviously, since foodborne illness from raw milk is a real risk. Nutrition specialists warn that consumption of unpasteurized milk can be potentially fatal in certain situations. So, back to what I was going to get to. What is raw milk? Well, it's dairy that hasn't undergone the pasteurization process. But simply put, when milk is transferred directly from the cow's udder to the consumer, it's categorized as raw. On the other hand, pasteurized milk is treated by heating every particle to a specific temperature, and that inhibits bacterial growth. This treatment is designed to render milk and its derivatives safe for humans by minimizing potentially harmful bacteria. It also extends milk's shelf life beyond decreasing spoilage bacteria. Routine pasteurization of milk began in the U.S. in the 1920s and had become the norm by 1950, primarily to mitigate contamination and curb the incidence of human illness. So let's compare raw milk versus pasteurized milk. Now, a prevailing reason that many opt for raw milk is the belief that it's healthier and more nutritious alternative to pasteurized variants. However, the majority of experts believe that this notion is exaggerated. While it's true that pasteurization can slightly reduce some vitamins in milk, like B12, vitamin E, vitamin C, folate, and vitamin B2, the overall impact on milk's nutrition content is negligible. Furthermore, while raw milk might possess marginally higher concentrations of vitamins, pasteurized milk offers a great assurance of safety. Raw milk can harbor harmful pathogens, including Campylobacter, Cryptosporidium, E. coli, Listeria, Brucella, and Salmonella. And as seen in recent outbreaks in Utah and Wyoming, consumption of these pathogens can result in foodborne illness from raw milk. Symptoms of such foodborne illnesses include diarrhea, nausea, fever, vomiting, and lethargy. And severe cases might lead to complications like kidney and brain damage, extreme dehydration, or even prove fatal. And while abstaining from raw milk won't guarantee immunity, obviously, from foodborne illness, it can certainly reduce the risk. So obviously, this is not the only time that raw milk has caused foodborne illness outbreaks. Historically, during the 1930s, when pasteurization wasn't mandatory, milk-related disease outbreaks accounted for about 25% of all outbreak incidents. So that's quite a few. Fast forward to the early 21st century when pasteurization became obligatory, milk products were implicated in less than 1% of such outbreaks. So this decline can largely be attributed to the pasteurization process. Nonetheless, instances of people falling ill due to foodborne illness from raw milk still persist. In 2005, 18 cases of E. coli infections stemming from raw milk were reported in Oregon and Washington, primarily affecting children under 14, and 5 of these cases required hospitalization. Then between 2007 and 2009, 30 instances of foodborne illness in the U.S. were directly linked to raw milk consumption. The CDC stated that raw dairy products are 840 times more likely to induce illness than their pasteurized counterparts. So one sad thing that I, you know, that came out of these stories is that, you know, several people affected by these foodborne illnesses are children. I think that, you know, if you as an individual, as you as an adult, if you want to take the risk of consuming raw milk and it's legal where you live, then I suppose it's up to you. However, I don't think it's, you know, it's sad that children are being infected from raw milk, since I highly doubt it was their choice. So, you know, with your Vera and Aisha, with your scientific backgrounds, I'm very curious to know your take on, you know, those that believe that raw milk is safer, that raw milk is healthier, and obviously that pasteurized milk is safer.
You know how in pharma they do like a risk benefit analysis to see if a drug is worth approving?
Yeah.
I think like the risk benefit of unpasteurized milk is just too high. Like there's too much of a risk compared to the small benefit, which you said, Sydney, the difference in nutritional content is negligible. So why would you risk drinking unpasteurized milk? Like it just doesn't make sense. The taste is like probably the same. I just don't get it, because it's too risky, and for what? Like you're still gonna get the same nutrition from pasteurized milk, honestly, so why would you take the risk, especially to give that to children? Like you said, that's, to me, is crazy and extremely like irresponsible, honestly. And yeah, I just don't think it's worth the risk. But I think there's many people, I think there's many farmers and, you know, people just who own cows or goats or whatever, and they just drink the milk like fresh from their animal. I do think that's a thing, but I don't think like, yeah, they should give it to children or, because it's too risky. What do you think, Aisha?
Yeah, I agree. And that was the first thing that came to mind, is like when you do these risk benefit analyses, here you're talking about, I think, Sydney, you mentioned in your article that the CDC says that raw dairy products are 840 times more likely to induce illness compared to their pasteurized counterparts. So that's very, very telling, and that should be very, very concerning. In my opinion, I don't think taking that risk is worth it. And to your point about children, exactly. They don't have the autonomy to make these kinds of decisions about what they ingest and what they eat. So parents need to be extra, you know, vigilant about these things, which I'm sure many are, but I think a lot of people just get caught up in the whole, oh, it's natural, it's organic. But you got to also realize that not everything in nature is completely safe, right? Just because it's natural and hasn't been processed and whatnot. We do have reasons for why some things are processed and the technologies that we've evolved to have. And that's why, you know, human health is where it's at today and why our life expectancies are so much longer and things like that. So not everything done back in the day was the best. Like people had a lot of diseases that we don't have today or that we can treat better today or because of our scientific advances and knowledge that we have. So I think that's one point. The other thing is, okay, you know, a lot of people might be, not a lot, but there may be people that do drink raw milk. We also need to think about where it's coming from. Are you talking about an organic smaller farm. Let's say if, you know, a farmer has some cows and, you know, they're grass fed, living in good conditions, or are we talking about mass produced milk from factories, right? And what are the conditions of these cows and things like that? So, you have to take a look at the source as well. Again, yes, there are people that can get away with drinking raw milk and they might be fine, but you know, according to the CDC, you do have these stats on how much of a risk it can be. So what, again, that's a decision that individuals do need to be, I think people need to be equipped with the information before they make these kinds of important decisions, especially when it comes to kids, for sure.
Yeah. And I also think what Sydney said, I think there's a lot of myths about like, mm-hmm. unpasteurized milk, like how it's better for you. And I think those myths are like the reason why a lot of people, or what you said, up to 4% of Americans drink unpasteurized milk.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm not sure about like what, you know, what studies are out there or what the scope of those studies are that are comparing raw to pasteurized milk and whether indeed, you know, you're losing significant amounts of nutrients and things like that. So yeah, there's probably definitely a lot of misinformation out there and myths around the benefits of raw milk versus pasteurized milk. But so yeah, do your research, but make sure those sources are credible and again, backed by science and good studies. So
I think here's my take, and I don't want to generalize the people that, you know, are drinking raw milk, but my thought is that they probably don't care about what the CDC has to say or what any legitimate scientific studies have to say. I think they would tell you that they are the liars and that they mm-hmm. know a better way of life, and we're actually the idiots who are consuming the safer product.
We're sheep, but
yeah, we're just the sheep and we're just going with, you know, what the grocery stores are selling us. And, you know, I get the allure of something so fresh that sounds delicious. However, the risk is
it just so much more delicious? I don't know.
I don't know. It sounds good to me. I mean, it looks really creamy. It looks good. But I think if you want to have a fresh product, use the smart chicken coop and have fresh eggs. You don't need to have fresh milk. And I think if people really knew how negligible that loss of nutrients was, maybe they would reconsider. But I think, like I said, the people that choose to drink raw milk and unfortunately also make the decision to give it to their kids, they don't really want to hear that it's an unsafe option. I think they'll get a dose of reality if them or their children are, mm-hmm. you know, have a foodborne illness, and hopefully that would be enough to change their minds. But yeah, I think with this, since there is such a demand for it, and with this growing legality in terms of states that are, you know, making it legal again, unfortunately, yeah, I think it's kind of becoming one of those like health food trends. And I think the saving grace is that, you know, when we look at this story, I mean, there were no more than like 30 people that I talked about that were recently, you know, diagnosed with foodborne illnesses. Obviously, one is too many. I don't want anyone to be getting E. coli, salmonella, or campylobacter. I don't want anyone getting anything, but these numbers are still relatively small at the end of the day. However, I still think it's way too big of a risk to be legalizing pasteurized milk, and especially giving it to your kids. I think that's a really unsafe and unwise decision, much like subjugating them to any sort of odd lifestyle that they're not used to. My mind goes to like van life, so like raising your children in a van. Not if you can afford not to, right? Like making that decision to do this like kooky granola lifestyle for them. Similarly with this milk, I feel like it's kind of the same thing. Like they didn't get to choose this and they're suffering from the outcome, sadly.
Mm-hmm. And you know what, like I can talk about, like, you know, back in a lot of countries, right? My mom talks about like how she had an uncle that lived in a village back home in Pakistan, and how they would have fresh milk, but they understood that boiling it was important. So they'd boil it on their stove. So it's not that, you know, if people are wary of commercial foods and that you find in the grocery store, well, you can get fresh milk and you can boil it at home. So that is also an option if you don't trust milk from the grocery stores. So again, like people back in the day and in villages that, you know, they also understood safety around raw milk and the potentials for like food, illness and things like that. So they also, back in the day, and even now, people living in rural areas, they do recognize that and pasteurize milk in their own way by just boiling it on the stove. So that is a thing.
Yeah, so, they probably know the best about the importance of doing that.
Yeah. So they know that, okay, it might taste better, but they're like, you know, we might not want to take that risk, especially for younger children and such. So again, like I just think we need to be equipped with more information. And again, if these people are willing to do the research, or to look at studies, or to maybe, if they don't trust the CDC, but then, okay, like what's the alternative? Just that you feel that this is better? I mean, you need to have the science to counter that. And sadly, it's not there, and people will just buy into myths and misinformation just to have a counter narrative. But that's not, if it's not backed by science, then that's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't eat or feed your children raw chicken. So, and I'm not saying they're the same things, but the same illnesses can come from both of those things. So, I mean, that's the best comparison that I can make. And we're all disgusted by raw chicken. So that's all I'll leave you with. But that's the end of this episode of the X Talks Food Podcast. If you like today's show, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Thanks, everyone, and see you next week. Bye.
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 Thanks for listening to the X Talks Food Industry Podcast. If you enjoyed our discussions today, please share the episode with your friends and colleagues, and be sure to subscribe in order to be notified when a new episode is released. To join in on the discussion, you can find X Talks on social media, email podcast@xtalks.com, or comment on the articles directly. Links are in the show description. Take a moment to join our community at xtalks.com to get access to everything we have to offer, including webinars, job listings, virtual meetings, articles, and more. The views and opinions expressed in the podcast are those of the speakers sharing them. They should not be taken as professional advice and do not necessarily reflect the policy or position Honeycomb Worldwide. For further information, email us at podcast@xtalks.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.